Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of our podcast series, Leadership Forward. My name is Hillary Kennedy, and I'm Program Director for Medicaid Leadership at NAMD. NAMD is working with CHCS and the Milbank Memorial Fund to bring you the series of discussions which focus on key domains associated with successful public sector leadership. With that said, I'll pass it along for today's discussion. Enjoy.
Hillary, thank you, and welcome everyone joining us for our podcast today. I am Mark Larson. I'm Senior Vice President at the Center for Healthcare Strategies, and we are joined today by two fantastic guests, Jim Jones and Tom Betlach, and we look forward to our conversation. We'll start actually asking Jim and Tom if you could just introduce yourself quickly. Jim, we'll start with you.
Sure. Hi. This is Jim Jones. I'm the State Medicaid Director in the state of Wisconsin. I have been since 2019 sometime. Exact time periods blur in the Medicaid Director job, as Tom knows. So I've been doing that. Before that, I spent 8 years as a consultant. We work for two or three different consulting firms working with states. I work with the federal government. I actually work with a bunch of not-for-profits like NASHPE and with Urban Institute, Robert Wood Johnson, et cetera. I worked with a couple of health plans as well. One of them was in Tom Betlach's area, and I got to know about his RFPs really well. But as we look at all of this, before that, I worked for the state of Wisconsin for 31 years. I spent 4 years as a state Medicaid director from 2007 to 2011. Before that, I was in a number of different staff and managerial positions within what was then the Division of Healthcare Access and Accountability. I'm glad to be back at the state working on Medicaid. So that's what I've been doing these last 40 years.
Jim, thank you and welcome.
Thanks.
Tom.
I don't have quite Jim's level of experience, but I've spent the last year serving as a consultant, working with states and payers for Spire Healthcare Strategies. But prior to that, I was the Medicaid director for the state of Arizona for almost a decade, served as the president and vice president for the National Association of Medicaid Directors. Prior to my time as being Medicaid director, I was the deputy director for about 7 years. And then before that, I was the budget director for the state of Arizona and served in that role for about 5 years and started originally in the budget office. So I completed about 27 and a half years of state experience and then retired about a year or so ago and have now spent the last year consulting.
Thank you, Tom. It was a weird privilege to have you both here for this conversation. Rarely, Tom, is there somebody who you say you don't compete with their experience. We're blessed to have both of you for this conversation about our topic today. And a little introduction. So we know that despite the individuals who work in state government being the backbone of our public efforts around a number of areas and their leadership in a lot of complex programs, fairly little investment is made in their development. And NAMD, the National Association of Medicaid Directors, CHCS, and the Milbank Memorial Fund, as organizations that have dedicated a lot of time to the notion of leadership in the public sectors and in the development of public sector leaders, we've been working together since September 2019 in a consortium to accelerate and amplify our efforts together in that space. And the first thing that we've been doing together is developing a shared leadership framework for public sector leaders, which we introduced in an earlier Leadership Forward podcast. We're continuing to introduce each of the domains of that framework by our focused conversations with public sector leaders like Tom and Jim. Today's conversation, we're gonna look closely at the domain of practicing good public administration. Some of the core competencies within this domain include business acumen, managing change, managing resources, financial and human, managing effective decision-making, and engaging diverse stakeholders, all part of the work of making state government work effectively and efficiently. Each of these core competencies have associated skills and behaviors. And today's conversation will focus on how Tom and Jim have put the behaviors and skills of this domain into practice, particularly in their efforts of leading during economic recessions. Both of you have significant experience in that area, and we're thankful for the opportunity to ask you a few questions and gain some wisdom from your years of service. So today's conversation will focus on how Tom and Jim put these behaviors and skills together in practice. And Tom and Jim, before we get into that part of the discussion, I'd like to give each of you a chance to provide a little more background on your professional journey and how you ascended to the positions you've been in as public sector leaders. If, as you're sharing, you could reflect on which of the competencies within this domain of public administration have resonated most in terms of contributors to your success. Jim, I'll see if you don't mind going first.
I don't mind at all. It's been a long journey. I'm not going to go into all the twists and turns that go through it. But on January 5th, 1980, I started as a clerical assistant one, and I managed the low-income energy assistance program in its second year of its existence. I was 19. I had just graduated from high school. It's amazing that they put that responsibility in my hands. I'm still kind of shocked. It's probably the most power I've ever had in state government. But over time, I went to college. I stayed in state government. I did a lot of different things over time. I was a trainer. I was a systems analyst. I was a policy analyst. And then I started moving up in the organization in different management positions. And then, you know, really in the eligibility enrollment space, I was the director of the Bureau of Healthcare Eligibility, which included the SNAP program as well. So I was the food stamp director for Wisconsin at the same time. And as I did those things and then came to sort of become the deputy administrator for our whole division running Medicaid and food stamps and a whole bunch of other pieces of the department. As I did those things, I'd say the number one thing that comes to mind is managing change. When I was a consultant as well, working with organizations, with states, with health plans, with the federal government, a big part is about managing change. It's literally a program in Medicaid that is constantly evolving. Healthcare, as we know, has evolved. You know, when I started off in Medicaid back in the 80s, it was a program that really served people on the AFDC program and on the SSI program and a few people in nursing homes. It was a pretty simple, straightforward program. And then as things changed, as welfare reform took hold, et cetera, Medicaid became more and more important. As the private sector changed, as we saw fewer people with health insurance through their employers, as we saw, you know, a rise in really that change in welfare reform that happened at the same time, we really got ourselves in a place where the program was constantly expanding. It was constantly changing from the Medicare Catastrophic Coverage Act back in the 80s through, you know, PORA, back through the Affordable Care Act. All those things happened. And as we did those things, it was all about adapting. It was all about thinking about where we wanted to go next, what our strategy was, and really what were our core principles, what were our values, what we were trying to do. I was part of a number of administrations that were all about let's expand, let's cover more people, let's make sure that they have a holistic approach to their healthcare coverage so that we can give them the best opportunity to live their best lives. And that's really been what we've been trying to do. So managing change is a lot about bringing people along with you on the journey. You know, all five of the things you mentioned basically are a Monday for a Medicaid director. But managing change is a big part of it because we're constantly using change management principles to really look at our staff, look at our managers, and convince them. Nobody should get the sense that we're dictators as Medicaid directors, because we're not. We have to convince the people who work for us and with us to move in the same direction. That means managing up to the governor, to the secretary of your department, your executive director, whatever that is. And it also means that you have to get all those providers and all those advocates and all those stakeholder groups heading in the same direction. If you don't, you're heading for a heartache. Even if you do, you're probably heading for some heartache anyway, definitely some brain aches. So you have to get all those people on board. You have to convince them that you have a vision for where you want to go and how you're going to end up getting there. I think once you do that, a lot of the other things that you're talking about, resources and acumen and decision-making, really kind of come along as you move forward. So that's my thinking about it. I think everything I've been doing has really been about change management, and it just really pulls all the other pieces in together.
Jim, thanks. Tommy, you've been around public administration for quite some time. What do you think were some of the keys of your journey along the way too?
Yeah, so Jim covered change great, and I agree with everything he said. So I'll talk a little bit about a couple areas that I was exposed to early. And clearly, Mark, your comments around states not investing in future leaders resonates a lot with me. It's one of the serious, I think, risks in terms of the Medicaid program and state government more broadly. And I saw it play out in my own career. So I started in September of 91 as a budget analyst in the governor's budget office, which I really enjoyed. You get exposure to a lot of different policy areas. And by 1997, I had become the director, the budget director for the state. And so, you know, during that time and then going forward in terms of my budget director experience, obviously you spend a lot of time managing resources, at least from the budgetary end, right? You don't have huge staffs and you're not running 1,000-person-plus agencies, but you are spending a lot of time and effort on the intersection of budget, resources, and policy, and having to help guide the executive branch through decision-making processes in terms of, you know, being able to invest in a lot of different policy areas. So I found the work incredibly interesting, incredibly intellectually stimulating, to be able to deal with all those different policy areas. Was challenged by the fact that I hadn't had a lot of leadership training and sort of tried to avail myself of anything that I could find at that point to be able to strengthen, because I knew it was an area that I needed to be able to grow if I was going to be successful. But also, I think one of the things that, you know, when you look at resource allocation, making decisions is such an important part of that. And I think being able to make decisions differentiates leaders, because oftentimes people can have great skill sets, but they're not willing to take on the risks. And government is a risk-averse organization, right? You don't necessarily get rewarded for making big decisions. In fact, almost the opposite plays out, where a lot of times people that are willing to take on and make decisions, they get focused on by the media or other types of implications associated with that decision-making process. But when you're in the budget office, you know, you really have to focus on trying to get access to the best data you have available, make some of the best decisions. And that really helped in terms of strengthening my platform in terms of decision-making within the Medicaid space, because what I learned within the budget office and being able to take that and apply it to how I would work in terms of interacting with my teams, interacting with stakeholders, really driving towards data-driven processes around decision-making. I felt that all of those basics were ingrained on me early on in that budget office in terms of building those skill sets, building that acumen, then being able to leverage it in terms of how I thought about resource allocation and the willingness to make decisions, which again, I don't think not everybody is willing to do in terms of the reward structure associated with it in government.
Thank you both. I mean, it's really interesting to reflect on the connection, Tom, between your point about making decisions differentiates leaders and Jim, your point about change is kind of constant and managing it is key. I mean, those two are kind of, they interact quite a bit. And I'm interested in pulling some of those threads forward. But as we think about the world we're in today, where we have an ongoing public health emergency, and we have a corresponding economic challenge for states, we want to think about how to help public sector leaders manage through those situations. And in particular, one of the key competencies in this domain we're talking about today is managing resources. I'm wondering if each of you could talk about how you've leveraged your leadership strategically to manage resources, but still deliver outcomes, particularly during hard budget years, in a way that doesn't exacerbate disparities, that continues to deliver positive outcomes for your members, and particularly when budget years are difficult. Tom, I wonder if we could start with you this time.
Yeah, I'm happy to start. And I'll just sort of base some of my comments on the lived experience I had going back to the last recession where I served as Medicaid director during the Great Recession. And I think it's important to understand contextually sort of what Arizona was faced with, because the recession didn't impact all states consistently. And so Arizona was actually the hardest hit state when you looked at the overall general fund impact during the last recession and the types of decisions that needed to get made. So, you know, Arizona raised taxes by $1 billion, which was a pretty considerable amount. Arizona sold the state capital and a bunch of other assets in terms of trying to generate one-time money, was still $1 billion short, because over the course of the Great Recession, lost about a third of its general fund. Same point in time, programs like Medicaid were growing, right? At that point in time, Medicaid grew by about 350,000 members on a base of 1.3 million members during the Great Recession. And so, you know, in managing resources during that time was incredibly important. And the legislature at the end of the day couldn't make decisions. They hit paralysis and were not able to move forward in terms of what types of changes need to be implemented in the Medicaid program. So they notwithstood every state statute, they cut the agency's budget by $1.5 billion total fund and then told my team to go figure it out. And so we had to have a plan, and our team, you know, worked through it. It was awful decisions. I mean, it was making some of the most difficult decisions I've had to make in my career. And we knew that many of the decisions we were making were impacting members. We had to eliminate coverage for some populations. We were reducing benefits. We were reducing provider rates. But at that point in time, we really didn't have places we could go to in terms of being able to make the overall numbers work. So it was an incredibly difficult time on the team. We talked a lot about really wanting to preserve the core of the program. We wanted to preserve the core coverage that we could for the greatest extent possible, preserve the core level of services to the greatest extent possible, and preserve core payments to the greatest extent possible. But we knew we had to make tough decisions. And again, I think some of the things we touched on earlier in the conversation in terms of looking at resource allocation, looking at the data, getting information from the team and really being able to share that in a meaningful manner, in a transparent way with stakeholders, but also that experience that I had had previously in terms of being deputy director and knowing how to operationalize the different decisions that we were making. So not only was it making the decisions, it was making the decisions and understanding that in a context of what could get done, how quickly it needed to get done, because really in terms of some of what we were dealing with, time was of the essence in terms of being able to generate savings, because the longer you waited to generate savings, the more you had to cut in that scenario. And so it was not only having an understanding of what our data looked like, but it was also in terms of that resource allocation piece, being able to understand what it took from a systems perspective, an 1115 perspective, state plan, all the other nuances that, you know, as Jim said earlier so well, all the things you think about by, you know, Monday at noon, but having to think about that through this series of difficult decisions that needed to get made and get made timely.
Tom, thanks. Jim, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk a little bit about, we did things a little bit differently. We were in a different kind of situation. We didn't have the economic situation that Arizona did, but in Wisconsin in 07 through 9, basically a bunch of, you know, between unemployment and people losing health insurance and with a structural deficit that we started to face even before this happened and their loss of revenue, Wisconsin found itself in a pretty difficult position. So we decided on a couple of things. We started off with some principles. We went forward in the legislature, just like Arizona. It's hard, they're in a situation where they are not experts in our programs. They are not, you know, they don't know the intricacies of what's going on. So they gave us not $1.5 billion. God, thank God. They just gave us $600 million in unspecified targets and said, listen, you got to come up with $600 million. So we had two ideas. One, let's figure out how we can do things more efficiently and effectively. So to do that, we launched a Medicaid redesign effort where we went out and met with every provider group we could think of, every advocacy group, every stakeholder group. And we looked at them and said, listen, we don't want to cut benefits. because we don't think that's a very effective way to do this. We don't want to cut rates because we don't want to affect access, and we definitely don't want to cut eligibility. And so we asked them to come up with ideas for what we could do. And Tom is exactly right. If you're going to save that much money in that amount of time, you got to do stuff fast. You can't wait 18 months while you're working on a waiver. You can't wait for that systems change that's going to be done in 2 years. What we found, though, was that there were a lot of efficiencies that we could implement to hit those targets. I like the phrase that says bad fiscal times do sometimes lead to better policy. So we were able to do some things and had some ideas from long ago that we had kept in our back pocket that are changes we made to the way that we finance things, to the way, including a hospital assessment, things that we did when it came to the way that we reviewed claims, put in more performance targets, put in more withholds in our managed care programs, a number of things that they actually suggested to us. So we got that buy-in early. So we weren't going to get, you know, pushback. Well, we got some pushback, but not as much. And we really focused on those. At the same time, our governor insisted that we provide more coverage to our members. And basically, we expanded access for parents, children, and pregnant women greatly. We went from basically 185% to 300% of poverty for pregnant women and children. We went up to 200% for parents. And we eventually added childless adults before the Affordable Care Act. So we had sort of a two-pronged approach. One was let's cover more people. And just so you know, the people we covered were fairly inexpensive on a month-to-month basis. It did take us a couple of years to do that. So we were outside the recession by that particular point. But at the same time, we wanted to make sure that we covered people as much as we had. I was not in the dire circumstances that Tom finds himself in. And I don't find myself in that position now as well. I mean, we have a $2 billion loss in revenues in our state. And we are going to try and find ways to close that deficit. And one of the ways we have in Wisconsin is we cover childless adults and parents up to 100% now. And we can just basically expand coverage to 138% of poverty under the Affordable Care Act. And we can raise about $600, $700 million in additional federal funds pretty easily. But we have a lot of pushback from our legislature that doesn't want the governor to fulfill that particular election promise that he made. So that's where we're heading. We're going to look. I got a whole folder of savings ideas that we've been collecting since the day I got here and before. And we'll be looking at those if we need to hit some kind of unspecified target for savings.
You know, what stands out in both of your answers is the one, the command for the resources that you have in play and the recognition of the need to deploy decisions in order to move things related to those resources, whether it's policy, human or financial, forward fast enough in difficult times. But in both cases, your ability to do that really relied, it seems, on the ability to have trust with legislators, folks in the administration, stakeholders outside of government, to be able to make the space for those things to happen. And if I could, I'd really be interested in each of you sharing any lessons learned along the way about how to engage stakeholders in a way that produces buy-in. That seems like one of the core areas of this domain, and wondering what tricks you would suggest folks try out.
Yeah, they aren't really tricks. They're more the idea of strategies of the way we deal with each other, right? When in our family, in a business, wherever you're at, the number one thing is to make sure there's education going both ways. We need to learn from them what they're facing. They need to be honest with us. We need to be honest with them and tell us the kind of barriers and issues that we face as well. Sometimes those are internal issues. Sometimes those are political issues. Sometimes those are logistic issues. So when they say to us, oh, you should do this and this and this, by the way, most of the things that people suggest immediately are against federal regulation. And you start like with an education, well, the law doesn't allow us to do that. So you talk about that. And the other thing is to have really say, I want your input and I have empathy in your situation. And I want you to have that same kind of empathy for me. So we treat each other like human beings. We recognize where we're both coming from. We get that input and we analyze it to see, again, what we were just talking about. How quickly can we do it? Who will it affect? What's the impact? You know, there's an old Medicaid joke, and it's not really a joke, but it's the truth, which is, listen, cut this optional benefit because that'll save money. But basically, you cut the optional benefit and, you know, another 10,000 people end up in the hospital. Well, that's not saving you any money. So you want to make sure that you're always looking out for what the impact down the road is going to be. You aren't here for tomorrow. You're here for a program that's going to be here for years and years. And the last thing is, and this is probably the business thing I learned more than anything else, is really underpromise. Don't start off with saying, yeah, that'll save $50 million. Start off with, that's a good idea. We'll look into that and we'll figure it out, and then overperform. So, you know, promise as little as you can get away with, and then come through on anything that you have promised, like gangbusters. So, you know, that's to me how we built up relationships then. It's how I've built up relationships now. That transparency of that process is really, really important.
Yeah, it's hard to build on that list because I think Jim hit all the high points in terms of what needs to be done. But, you know, when I look back, we could have gone one way. We could have just made our decisions and moved on and not communicated much with stakeholders. But that would have been the wrong approach, and it would not have served us well going forward as an organization. It would not have built support for the program. So, you know, we felt it was important to get out early and often and share as much information as possible. I mean, you got to remember, in the recession, providers, they're just trying to stay in business. They're just trying to manage a larger book of business that Medicaid's just a piece of. They're probably not reading the Arizona Republic every day to find out what the latest is in terms of state revenues and the overall budget picture. So we felt it was critical for us to be able to go out and provide information and context in terms of why we were taking the actions that we were taking. And, you know, it served me well to be a former budget director, to be able to go out and communicate that and offer context of, here's the state's general fund. Here's the state's general fund shrinking by a third because of these various impacts. Here's where the general fund goes in terms of 40%+ going to support K-12 education and X% going to support higher education in terms of the allocation of the general fund and the cuts that those organizations had already taken. And here's how Medicaid works. And, you know, again, most physicians or other providers, they just, you know, they know they get a dollar. They don't know that, 25% of that comes from the state and 75% of that comes from the federal government and what the state's limits are around making their various decisions. But I felt it was important. We felt it was important as a team to really provide more context in terms of why we were making the decisions that we were making at that point in time. And then Jim touched on this as well, but listening what stakeholders had to say through that process, you know, getting input from our stakeholders made our decisions better. We made changes with regards to how we serve our tribal partners that did not end up in reductions when it could have ended up in reductions if we would have just gone straight forward with our original approach. And so they helped inform our overall decision-making as just one of many examples that that stakeholder engagement process did to make it a better product in the end. And then the third was, we took that opportunity to talk about where we were going as a program to try and offer some sense of hope that, you know, it wasn't just going to be, these are these massive reductions that are coming. But we talked about the ACA and what was coming under the ACA and the opportunities that would be there for a state like Arizona. We talked about where we were going on integration, and that struck a chord with certain providers that wanted to see the state go in that route. We talked about value-based purchasing and where we were going as a state. So at the same point in time that we were bringing all of this very depressing news in terms of the near-term actions that we were taking, we wanted folks to hold out hope that the program was, you know, going to be able to come out of this, there were going to be opportunities to be able to restore some of the things that we were cutting, and that we were looking to reshape the program in a meaningful manner that we're going to improve outcomes going forward as well. And those are still the directions that the agency is going, you know, now almost a decade later after the Great Recession in Arizona.
You know, what stands out to me in both of your answers is the sincere commitment to engaging in relationships in a mutual manner with the goal of trying to achieve success together. while also needing to respond to the issues of the day. We have time for just a quick last question, if we could. You both have the opportunity to lead really big transformational change in your careers. And I'm wondering if you were thinking about somebody who was new to public leadership and thinking about wanting to be good in the realm of public administration, what tips would you give to somebody new in their career around being successful in managing transformational change? Tom, how about we start with you?
In terms of transformational change, I think we were successful in Arizona in bringing about some of the significant changes we were in Medicaid because we were disciplined in our approach around it. So, you know, we developed what direction we wanted to go in as a team. It wasn't done in isolation. It was from getting input from a variety of different folks through that process, whether it was members, families, providers, plans, policymakers. And so we took all of that in. We made some decisions. We communicated those decisions in terms of the direction that we were going to be going, but we were disciplined as an organization and sort of stuck to that path over a long series of time. And I felt that, you know, if there were opportunities where we needed to go back and recheck in terms of the approach that we were taking and the decisions, we would do that. We would again gather information from our stakeholders, reassess, reaffirm, and then we would continue the trajectory that we were on in terms of transformation. And so, you know, I feel that that approach around iterative in terms of incremental change, I don't think Medicaid's a program that you just make these huge changes overnight and expect to be successful, that you have to take input, you have to be thoughtful, you have to be disciplined, and it has to be incremental in terms of how you approach transformative change. And I think sometimes people push back on that approach because they do want to see change come quicker. And Jim touched on this earlier. I mean, these are huge programs, and it's just very difficult given the importance of them, the number of stakeholders that have opinions about how they should be run and the approaches that they should take, that it just does take time and thoughtfulness to be successful.
Tom, thanks. Jim, what advice would you give to somebody new in their career in public administration?
You know, I completely agree with Tom. I mean, he's said a lot of things I wanted to say. One of the big points I would have is, while you have to know what your limits are and how much change you can make at a time, having a vision of what you see the future to be, making that very aspirational, being able to tell that story and generate some energy is a big part of this. Knowing where you're going and then talking about the strategy for how you're going to get there, all those little steps you're going to have to take that I think Tom was just talking about. And then getting internal buy-in to your strategic vision is hugely important. And then adjusting and adapting. It's a constant thing of, well, my vision is out there. This is where I want to go. And look, just so we all know, it's not a static thing. It gets adapted. It gets adjusted based upon everybody's input. You have to manage up and manage down, get everybody on the same page, moving in the same direction. And then again, understanding your limits. There are real limits. You only have so much money. There are only so many hours in the day. There are only so many people in your division or your department where you work. So you have to know what those limits are. And then you work every day a little bit at a time, chip away at it to head in that particular direction. And you remind people that they're part of something that's big, that the impact that it has on people's lives, on the member who's, you know, going to work every day or taking care of their kids or whatever it is, and also on those provider groups and making their lives a little bit easier. If you keep in mind what you're trying to do and what your vision is and you chip away at it every day, I think you can attain some pretty big things. I mean, I was in Arizona as a consultant. I saw the great things that Tom and his staff did, and they were aspirational. They're things that I brought to Wisconsin when I took this job, after having learned about it, that I want to be able to do too. So you can see the great things that people like Tom and others can accomplish.
Mark, there's one more thing I would add that we really haven't touched on. And I think it's for people not only early in their career, but I found it to be incredibly helpful along the way. And that's just having good mentors. And I think that's important in any role. But I look back at my career and I had a half a dozen or so people meaningfully impact my trajectory as a professional and as a leader. And those people were incredibly important. They were open with their time. They were always willing to answer any question I had, no matter how often I bugged them. And so, you know, I think we should always be encouraging people to find individuals that are willing to mentor them in their career. And I'm sure Jim has a list too of people
absolutely.
That he was absolutely. Able to point to that meaningfully impacted his career. And just about everybody I know, you know, has had somebody help mentor them along the way. And so, you know, I think that's something else that's incredibly important. It doesn't tie to the nuts and bolts of everything we've touched on in vision and implementation, making decisions and dealing with change, but it is just part of that overall growth that we need to do as leaders. We need to offer to the next generation, but, you know, I would encourage folks to find a mentor if they're early in their career to be able to help them just look at ways that they can increase their opportunities to have meaningful impact.
Yeah, the encouragement that those mentors provided me over time was a real key. They were just so encouraging. They believed in me, helped me believe in what I could do, showed me ideas for the ways that I could make things my own, and I owe so much to all those people.
Tom and Jim, I want to thank you. You really touched on a couple of important pieces of our work together as three organizations trying to support public sector leaders. One is the importance of their work. The other is the difficulty of it in a world where change is always happening and resources always feel limited. You've also connected to the idea that while we have five different domains, and today we were talking about good public administration, they connect. That notion of the importance of strategic focus and vision and the connection to what really matters and values that drive us. Those pieces are always intertwined. And I was really impressed at the way that you, while we're talking about one domain, really reinforce important themes from the others as well. And to your last point, we really want to support folks who are doing this important and difficult work and try to provide through the framework some sense of coherence, some sense of ability to think about how to do it well. And you two are examples of years of doing it well. And so we really appreciate you sharing a few suggestions, some of your experience along the way. It's a gift to us. So thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all. We appreciate you joining us. And please join us for future podcasts about our framework for public sector leadership. Thank you.